Yeah, I'm really in the mood for breakfast, to tell you the truth. I'll have sausage, eggs, bacon, and spam, if you would please. A real Vikings breakfast. Spam. You don't have spam. Do you have treat? With two E's? No? How about prem? Prem. Okay, you got prem. I'll have sausage, eggs, bacon, and prem, then, if you will. Oh, good Lord. How about that? I'm led in an incrementally different universe that does not have spam, but does have prem. This was one of the mystery meats that they had during World War II, and they had to come up with all kinds of new, strangely, oddly, quasi-synthetic ways to keep the population well-fed with protein. So they had spam, which stands for spiced ham, and a treat with two E's, which is Lord knows what sort of abattoir scrapings that was, and prem, which, of course, is from premium. But it's you say prem, not preem. Preem sounds too much like something you would put in your coffee, doesn't it? Some synthetic dairy ersatz substance. What a life it must have been during World War II. Prem and preem and no milk and no meat. Hi, folks. James Lodix here at the, well, one of the diners. Sitting at my, well, accustomed now. I've been here for a couple of weeks. Accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern for Micah Connor at the old diner out on Old Highway 23 in an incrementally different universe from where you may be and where I certainly am trying to get back to. As you know, or don't, I'm lost. I'm trying to find my way through these multiverse places, each of which has some little small details. The old Million Monkeys thing, right? At some point, the Million Monkeys are going to type everything in Shakespeare except for a crucial word, to be or not to be, B-double-E. You know, and that won't be it, and the monkeys got to start all over again. Tale of Sound and Fury signifying muffin. You know, and then it's like, oh, God, we were so close. Anyway, I decided to stick around on this one because I was so fascinated by the music. It turns out that all of the renowned pop songs are sung by people who, in my universe, were television stars, actors, and the like. And none of it's very good. But there's more to come, I guess, and I would love to share it with you. First, though, I would like to tell you what I've been up to in this particular IDU. I'm a newspaper columnist here, too. It's kind of depressing how every different little incrementally different universe I go to, I'm still a newspaper columnist. I'm never a race car driver. I'm never a brain surgeon. I'm never a rocket scientist. I'm never a rock musician. I'm never even an FM DJ. I'm just a newspaper. I just go to the room and type periodically. That's it. And then have to find other ways to fill my time. Well, apparently, the me in this IDU does a lot of public speaking, which is great, which is fine. It's fun. I enjoy it. There's always that little trepidation, of course, because unless you do it every single day, often for a variety of audiences with a standard script that you know works, there's always the feeling, the sensation, the trepidation that you're going to bomb, and that you're going to bomb early, and that everything else subsequent to that initial realization of your bombing will just be gruesome. Because I tend to write my speeches for whatever audience I'm doing. I don't have a speech. I figure out who I'm talking to and tailor to that. The last one I did was in Reno. I went out there to give a speech and to shoot a man and watch him die. And from the very beginning, I had them. And it was great. And it was a wonderful feeling. And it gave me great confidence to go on. And that's usually how it goes. But, well, like I say, apparently I do a lot of public speaking in this version of me. And I was at the office and I get a text that says, my car is here. Oh. Again, I've walked in and inhabited this me's life and schedule and the rest of it. And Lord knows where he went. Lord knows what he's doing. It's like all these billiard balls clacking together and knocking off into... It's like all these bowling balls jumping lanes and smashing into the pins that somebody else set up. I mean, it's just... the mind hurts when I think about it, and I really don't want to. I just want to get home. But anyway, the car is there, and there's a driver, and he tips his hat, and he says he's going to take me to the lecture. Well, that's great. All right, well, I'm up for a lecture, so I go, and I get there, and there's this very nice young lady with a clipboard and something for me to sign. It's a tax thing, because they're going to pay me to speak? Wait a minute, to speak? Now, you know how you have those dreams where you show up and you're supposed to give a speech and you have no idea what you're supposed to talk about? This was that. Except this is not a dream. I'm actually here. There's a hall. There's lots of people. And It's not a dream. And I don't have a speech. I don't think I can start to use the 1970s interior design speech that I gave in Reno. I really don't. So luckily, my speech is printed on the program for this. And it was unraveling the mysteries of the post-Caesar Roman Empire. Well, all right. So I'm introduced as somebody who apparently wrote some fictional stories about Rome, and that, I guess, qualified me to talk about post-Caesar Rome. So I get up and I face the audience, and I can tell they're young. They don't seem to be, like, really needing to be here. This may be something that their school shipped them to for credit or something like that. So I just start talking. So after Julius Caesar, of course, was assassinated on the Ides of Mars, there was the, I said that, Ides of Mars, to see if anybody, you know, cocked an eyebrow. Nobody did. Good. They don't know anything. I can go. After that, of course, there was the period of civil war, after which Augustus emerged. And Augustus, the first citizen he later liked to be called, instituted an era of peace and stability. Granted, the end of the Republic, the end of any pretense of rule by the people, but the Senate was now a functionary, you know, chatterbox organization that existed to channel the needs and the quarrels and the political desires of the upper class, while Augustus himself solidified his power and sent the tentacles of the state essentially into every element of people's lives. But it was benevolent on its face. There was the pretense that he was the first citizen, one, an equal among many, or maybe just a little bit more equal than others, but still, the guy who had brought stability. I found Rome a city of brick, I left it a city of marble, he said on his deathbed. And when he died, of course, there was the question as to whether or not Rome was going to go back to a republic, but that was never really any in doubt. There was all of the maneuvering that came during Augustus' lifetime, during which, of course, we had the death of Germanicus, the heir who supposedly was going to take over for him, the adoption of Tiberius, who eventually ended up being almost a second Augustus, if not in temperament, then in duration of his rule, at least. He was around for an awful long time, even after he had decamped to Rhodes, where supposedly he sat in his pool while little boys nibbled at him. There was still the imperial presence that solidified after another generation the loss of the Republic and the rise of the Emperor. Now, in the Judeo-Claudian line, what was next? Well, of course, following Tiberius came the awful Caligula, a name which to this day raises people's ire, because how anybody that monstrous, that corrupt, that foolish, that mad, that daft, slept with a sister, he brought his own horse into the Senate and named him to Senate. How somebody like that could control the reins of power was truly a mystery to the people of Rome, and they wondered if their civilization was strong enough to take it. Well, as it turns out, institutionally it was. Because after, of course, the reign of Caligula was stabbed after attending a sporting event, came Claudius. And Claudius Drusus Nero Germanicus was, by some accounts, a fairly wise ruler, by some accounts a doddering placeholder, by others particularly vicious. We do know, for example, the Juvenal satire about the pumpkinification of Claudius. It was a term that he used to satire the deification that seemed to follow now the death of any emperor. It may have meant that Claudius was regarded by the intellectual class as an idiot, but nevertheless, he made it for several decades, after which Nero, the one who famously, supposedly strummed his lyre while Rome burned. And after that, we have the end of the dynasty, which brings us to, well, I don't want to get too ahead of the story here, but are there any questions so far? And I look around, and the expressions on everyone's faces is extraordinary. They're stunned. They're absolutely stunned. There's incredulity. There's some wry smiles. And, I mean, basically, I just sort of, I'd just given them the plot of I, Claudius. But then I took questions. And there are a lot of questions about my sources, which I sort of manufactured on the spot. Robert Graves, Seneca, the works of Cato the Really Younger, et cetera, et cetera. And then stunning applause at the end of it. Well, I don't know. And then a throng of people, students coming up after me later wanting to know more and more and more. Was Augustus married? Yes, of course he was married. He was married to Livia. Livia, who, for all we know, was the power behind the throne, and may have assassinated Augustus with some poisoned figs, as the story went, in order to secure the rise of her son Tiberius. Why do you ask? And so forth. I mean, they were asking about Agrippina, they were asking about Sejanus, these names that I'd mentioned in the speech. And they're writing it all down. It's like, dude, just go to Wikipedia. Anyway, so I go back to my office, and I indeed went back to Wikipedia thinking, I may have bobbled a few details here. After all, this isn't a parallel universe. It's not mine. It's incrementally different. It's entirely possible that Nero came before Claudius, and Claudius came before Tiberius. I mean, who knows the order of the names, and maybe Germanicus wasn't killed. And, so I look it up, and I find that there was a fire in Rome that apparently destroyed all records of everything that had happened between the period of Sulla and the period of the post-Claudian dynasty. Essentially, the fire that Nero, that whole thing, had destroyed all the records, and nobody knew anything that had happened. There had just been a mention of a Caesar and his death and the rest of it, and the rest was lost to history. So essentially, I had gotten up and told them what had really happened based on I, Claudius, the television show, which is fantastic, by the way. And I hope they air it someday here on the BBT. Oh, my God. So, as you can imagine, I've been fielding lots of offers to talk about these things. And book contracts, people are fascinated about this. But essentially, I'm worried that I'm going to be exposed as a fraud, because essentially, I don't have any sources. There's no way for me to prove anything that happened here. But really, when you think about it, even if it happened differently here, they did have everything leading up to Caesar, and then they had everything after Nero. Does it really matter in the middle whether or not Augustus lasted for a little while and Tiberius an awful lot longer and Claudius for the... Does it matter? Because the end result essentially was the same. I have given them some history for them to explore. And like I say, I'm getting lots of questions. I'm getting lots of offers. I get lots of phone calls. I get lots of emails. And it tells me one thing. I'm going to answer a few of these, and then I'm getting into the phone booth. I'm getting the hell out of here, because at some point they're going to find out that I'm just making this stuff up. But I'm giving a pretty cool Sejanus, for example. When I describe Sejanus, I'm describing him as Patrick Stewart looked, because that's what he was in the television show. And as a matter of fact, I'm giving them all very detailed, specific physical recommendations of the characters based on what I remember from the show and from other Roman television programs. So, doing my part to fill in their history. And they'll never thank me. They'll never know. Matter of fact, if the me in this dimension gets back to his home place, he is going to be really, really, really unhappy over the fact that he's now being seen as the world's most preeminent Rome scholar. And then he will probably be found out because he has no sources, and they will say he's making it up, and he will be discredited. And I've ruined his life, but I've given Western civilization its history back. So, I'd like to think it balances out. All right, let's go to the jukebox. I was telling you that there were songs that were sung by actors and that there don't seem to be any professional singers here. Last visit we had, we discovered, for example, Rex Harrison's singing, Try a Little Tenderness. Let's see what we have in that vein on the jukebox here. Let's go to D1.
In the hustle of today, we're all inclined to miss little things that mean so much. A word, a smile,
a fist,
a kiss.
No.
When a woman loves a man, he's a hero in her eyes.
Boy, the orchestra's doing all the work here.
And a hero he can always be.
If he'll just respect her thighs.
Realize.
Something like that. You're going to sing now, right? You're going to sing? And...
She may be weary. Women do get weary. Wearing the same shabby dress.
Again, buy her a new dress, okay? I know cops don't make that.
And when she's weary, try a little tenderness.
Shake on some Adolphs, and you knead her a little. That's knead with a K, by the way. Any more advice?
You know she's waiting. just anticipating things she may never possess. While she's without them, try a little tenderness.
It was June 3rd. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were doing the song out of Studio B. The producer is Bob Simon. My name's Webb. At 2:53, I looked down at the sheet. Another verse.
It's not just sentimental. She has her grief and care. And a word that's soft and gentle makes it easier to bear. You won't regret it. Women don't forget it. Love is their whole happiness.
Hey, he was sleeping with Julie London. I think he knows what he's talking about.
It's all so easy. Try a little tenderness.
And if that doesn't work, make the cocktails extra strong, I guess. Because it was cocktail time, you imagine, at the London Webb household. You imagine that if you knocked on their door at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, cigarette smoke would billow out when they opened it up. Julie London, yes. But eventually she got clear of Jack for some reason and hooked up with Bobby Troup, who was this sort of frog-like doctor on Emergency. And she was a nurse on Emergency. And Jack Webb produced the show Emergency, so obviously no hard feelings there. Yeah, you know, I love Jack Webb. That song probably is not the best application of his talents, but somebody once pointed out that Jack Webb went from being the man to being the man, that he was originally very cool, and he was. I mean, even before Dragnet, he had, well, he started out with a sort of comedy variety show, which didn't last very long. Wonder why? He's a very funny guy when he wanted to be, but the show didn't work. And then he did a sort of this over-the-top parody of hard-boiled detective shows called Pat Novak for Hire. And then after that, he went on to Dragnet, which, of course, made his fame. And I always thought that the reason that he was regarded as such a stiff was because the show Dragnet had such an inert visual style when it was actually just a sort of a manifestation of the radio show. I mean, nobody moved around much in the radio show when they were talking either. And the thing that was always notable is when there was the end of a scene in Dragnet, there'd always be music. Dun, dun, dun. You know, Friday would say something portentous like, no, ma'am, he didn't either. That would be, you know, some way of making an ironic commentary on something. No, man, I'm sure he didn't think he would. And then, dun, 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 and the camera would go to the person they were talking to, usually Virginia Gregg, and then it would go to his partner, and then it would go to Friday, and everybody would nod at each other. Pointless. But it was just doing what the radio show did, because the radio show, at the conclusion of every one of Friday's little stingers or statements, would have a little musical interlude by Walter Schumann. Dun, 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 before they moved on to the next. And he was unable to shake that transitional device when he took the show from radio to television. It's one of the reasons it looks so inert. But gotta love him anyway. All right, who else do we have here? What other great singer? Man, it was possibly federal law that every television star was required to sing Try a Little Tenderness. Although, I have to say, I enjoy Rex Harrison's version a little better, because at the end he did sing a little to make you realize that he couldn't sing. So, well, let's see what we got here. Let's go to P2, flip side.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine. You threw the bums a dime in your prime, didn't you? People call, say, beware, doll, you're bound to fall. You thought they're all kidding you. Used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Now, you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging for your next meal.
I think it's Sebastian Cabot.
How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home?
Doing Dylan.
Like a complete unknown.
Why?
Like a rolling stone.
Why?
Well, you've gone to the finest school, all right, Miss Lonely, but you know you only used to get juiced in it. And nobody ever taught you how to live on the street, and now you gotta get used to it. You said you'd never compromise with the mystery tramp. But now you realize he ain't selling any alibis.
Oh, that family affair, that show was cursed. To the little girl, Buffy, she died of a drug overdose. The boy got into drugs and alcohol. Brian Keith shot himself. The only one to make it out alive was Mrs. Beasley.
How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home? Like a complete unknown. Like a rolling stone. You never turned round to see the frowns on the jugglers and the clowns when they all came down and did tricks for you? Never understood that it ain't no good. You should let other people get your kicks for you. You used to ride on the chrome horse with your diplomat who carried on his shoulder a Siamese cat. Ain't it hard when you discover that he really wasn't where it's at after he took from you everything he could steal? How does it feel? Huh? How does it feel to be without a home, like a complete unknown, like a rolling stone? Princess on the steeple and all the pretty people drinking, thinking they've all got it made, exchanging all kinds of precious gifts and things. But you'd better lift your diamond ring. You better pawn it, babe.
Oh, God, somebody recognizes me,
he used to be so
I think.
Amused at Napoleon in his rags and the language that he used.
He's coming
you
over this way.
No, he called you. You can't refuse. When you've got nothing to lose. Why, you're invisible now. You got no secrets to conceal. How's it feel? How's it feel to be without a home?
Oh, you
like
saw,
a complete unknown.
You saw the lecture.
Like a
you did.
Rolling
thank you.
Stone.
I'm glad you enjoyed the lecture. Yes, it was fun. It certainly gotten a lot of attention, I agree. Was that Nero? Nero. You wanted to know more about Nero? Well, we know Nero, of course, was, it's hard to say whether or not the accounts of Nero's life are accurate, because he was regarded as something of a traitor to his class. He thought himself as a performer, a dancer, a singer, a musician, and that simply wasn't done by men of his class. So he scandalized so much the upper Roman echelons that the subsequent biographies that we have of him may be slanted. We do know that he did not burn down Rome, as some say. He did not play the fiddle while Rome had that great conflagration. No, no, it wasn't a fiddle. Actually, there are some frescoes that we've seen that seem to indicate that when Nero was observing, he actually had some cymbals that he had tied to the inside of his kneecaps, and then he had a bass drum, and then he had a washboard, and a metal thimble on his toe, and he would scrape that across the washboard, and he would have a beat going with the cymbals and the drum, and then he had a xylophone, and then he had something of a harmonica of sorts. So he was like a one-man band. So he stood and watched Rome burn and conducted this sort of cacophonous, rhythm section, one-man rhythm section, you might say. I think that was his nickname in Rome, was Old One-Man Rhythm Sectionist or something like that. So we know that from the mosaics. I'm sorry? Yeah, the frescoes and the mosaics. They tend to support each other. But anyway, he died. He was stabbed outside of his golden house, which was pretty big, huge. It's what we would call a McMansion Plus today, and quite remarkable in its engineering and its concrete construction, but not much of it is left. And he died saying, supposedly, "What an artist dies with me," which is very interesting. Some people, however, say that being an artist and being about 27, that actually Nero was not stabbed to death. He choked on his own vomit. And he may be the first example of that happening in recorded history, and certainly in Roman history. There's a lot of vomiting going on, but not an awful lot of choking on your own vomit. The Romans were good at vomiting. They were practiced at it. So no, I don't think that they choked on it. You're welcome. You're welcome. I don't need my autograph. Oh, all right. God, I've got to get out of here. There you go. There you go. There you go. What did I miss? Did I miss Sebastian Cabot singing a Dylan song? Yeah, I pretty much did, didn't I? I don't think I missed anything at all. All right, I got to get out of here, because this thing about being famous for all of a sudden being the world's most notable Latin scholar with all these incredible insights and pieces of knowledge. I mean,
I mean, even here in the diner, there are people who are pointing at me and saying, that's the Roman guy. So I got to get out of this incrementally different universe. First, though, I'm going to splash some water in my face and restore my spirits and hope I can make it to the bathroom without somebody stopping to get my autograph or ask me another question about Rome. I'll be back in a second, but first, a word from one of our sponsors.
Something you should be in the know about is Dimaxio. D-I-M-A-X-I-O. Dimaxio, truly the most sensational discovery of the 20th century. There's never been anything like it. Just imagine a product that's lanolized, homogenized, and plastinated. That's Dimaxio, maximum efficiency for only a dime. Use Dimaxio to give a smooth, glistening, easy-to-keep-clean surface on floors and windows, to set your hair in lustrous, natural waves, to remove dingy, dangerous film from your teeth, to purify your breath and help prevent cavities. What's more, Dimaxio tastes good, and it's good for you. Dimaxio is high in food value, low in calories. It contains 602 units of fat-fighting glutamines. So, to get the most out of life, get Dimaxio, available in paste, powder, and liquid form. Only 10 cents at all service stations, grocery, drug, and hardware stores.
Okay, I'm back. What did I miss?
I left a good job in the city.
Spock, you can't be serious.
Working for the man every night and day. And I never lost 1 minute of sleeping, worrying about the way things might have been. Big wheel, keep on turning. Proud Mary, keep on burning.
Rolling, yeah, you know.
Rolling, rolling on the river.
If you love an actor or the character that they play, you generally give these things an awful lot of slack, don't you? I mean, nobody's ever going to say, I don't want to watch Star Trek anymore because I heard that guy's album and it was horrible. No. So we'll just let that one go. And I think it's time for me to go as well here, too. For some reason, I'm looking up at the television set and I keep expecting to see my picture and, a crawl. New questions arise about startling claims about Rome. Probably not going to happen. I don't think that's the sort of thing they'd break in for, exactly. But it's going to catch up with me, and I'd rather get out of here so it catches up to my doppelganger. Poor guy, never going to know what hit him, but I hope he does okay. So, time to go back to the old phone booth and see where off I go next here. Let's go.
Hello?
Hello? Did I mention it's totally black and white in here? There's no color. Even if I'm wearing colored clothes when I walk in here, they're black and white.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
Oh, that's what you think.
If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and try your call again.
No, that's the secret message that tells me to stick around. I know the drill, but... I know the drill, but I'm never quite used to that. It's been a couple of weeks. Ooh, it's like mercury going up and down my spinal column this time. I don't have more hair on my head or at all. I'll be standing up. Here I go. And I've wet myself. Thought I was used to this. Well, crab walk back to my accustomed seat with the long boomerang pattern for my counter. Hope they have electric blow dryers in the bathroom here. That'd be helpful. All right. What's different about this place? It's not home. If it was home, my phone would have buzzed as it reconnected with a cellular network in my home universe. But it isn't, and it doesn't, and it won't, because I'm not going to get home, am I? What are the chances of that? What are the chances of it ever happening as I go through these infinite number of places that I would land up back at the one. I mean, again, I say if I landed one that is absolutely identical in every possible way and the phone somehow connects and it's all the same except, you know, my dog has one black spot on his head and that's it for the universe. I don't care. I'll take it. Let's see. Knives, forks, spoons. That's all the same. Oh. Oh, the fork is on the right side of the plate and the spoon is on the left. That's the difference. That's the entire difference, probably, in this universe. Well, it could work. Yeah, no. Ow! Just went to scratch myself and it hurt, and I realized I have a hook for a left hand. I'm looking around. There. Everybody has a hook for a left hand. The hell is the story behind this? I'll find out, and I'll get back to you in just a bit. Oh, good Lord. Well, thanks for joining me, friends. This is James Lilac's Roman Expert. No, not anymore. That was the previous universe. But this is The Diner. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you down the road.
How does it feel? How does it feel?